Good morning, I'm Robin with KUAC Local News. Alaska's Alcohol Regulatory Board has voted to oust its director, though the law also gives the state's Marijuana Regulatory Board a say. The boards share Erica McConnell as director. The Marijuana Control Board this summer held a vote of confidence in McConnell, a motion board chairman Mark Springer says he stands by. But yesterday, the Alcohol Beverage Control Board voted to boot McConnell. Chairman Bob Klein praised her work ethic and administrative skills, but said he sees a disconnect between the board's wishes and how McConnell approaches her position. McConnell, in a memo, said the board met privately in April for her evaluation, but that the evaluation had never been provided to her verbally or in writing. The law also provides limited circumstances under which the governor could remove McConnell. Voters in Bethel said no to liquor stores and yes to local option in their municipal election earlier this week. More than 60% of voters chose to enter local option. KYUK's Greg Kim reports.
January 6th is the last day Caribou Traders can be open. But the liquor store's closing is only one part of local option. There are also limits on how much alcohol you can bring into and possess in Bethel. People will have to mark their luggage if they're flying in with alcohol. Bootlegging will become a felony, as will furnishing alcohol to someone underage. What will be the starting date for all of this? The state's Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office Director, Erica McConnell, says she doesn't know.
The statute is very clear about what happens to any licenses that are no longer authorized to be in Bethel, and that is a 90-day period. But statute is not clear about the other elements of local option.
McConnell says no one at the state's Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office was around when a community in Alaska went into local option. She says she's working with the office's legal department to figure out when Bethel's damp status officially begins. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
Alaska now joins 14 other states that don't fund public media. Public radio and TV stations across the state, including KUAC, lost all their state funding this year when Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed it. The loss poses a long-term challenge to keep the service. Alaska Public Media's Andrew Kitchenman has more.
KIYU Galena and 11 other stations that repeat KIYU's signal in Western Interior and rural Alaska have had one full-time staff member in recent years. Now they're moving to none. They're planning on replacing the full-time general manager who left earlier this year with three part-timers. At KFSK in Petersburg, state funding made up 16% of the yearly budget. The cuts range from reducing phone lines and eliminating travel for the staff to ending the station's membership in American Public Media. Station manager Tom Abbott says he's focused on avoiding eliminating any of the four full-time positions at his station. But during a local community news show, he said the station would stop buying supplies, which prompted an outpouring of support.
It was amazing to have people come by with cases of paper towels and different, you know, gallons full of liquid dish soap and things like that.
Abbott says it's important to the community to have local nonprofit journalism. And one reason why the station is essential to the community is the role it plays in emergencies, like when a mudslide buried a road.
The information comes through the radio as to what to do, how the detour is being worked out by the officials. First responders call us right away to get the information out to the public, how they want people to react.
Molly Kabler is the executive director of Alaska Public Broadcasting Incorporated. It provides coordination and technical support for all of the state's public broadcasters. At a meeting in June, when the state funding cut was on the horizon,
they said they thought they could probably make it this year, but they were concerned about fiscal year 21 and how they would manage.
That's because a major source of funding for stations comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and it requires most stations to raise a lot of money to be eligible for these grants. Kabler says $185,000 in federal matching funds is at risk, while more than $1 million could be lost in the future, depending on how well stations succeed in replacing the state dollars.
They will have to spend less time serving community directly with broadcasting and spend more time raising money.
An example of a station in a more challenging position is KCHU, which is based in Valdez and serves other communities in Prince William Sound and the Copper River Valley. KCHU station manager John Anderson says Valdez residents have responded to a call for support. But Anderson says it's hard to raise money in communities directly impacted by the cut to the Alaska Marine Highway System service.
Overall, there's a feeling of loss of population, loss of importance, and loss of any attention to our area over here in Prince William Sound and the Copper River Valley.
Anderson says there may come a time when KCHU is no longer a nonprofit public radio station.
I'm not saying the operation is unsustainable, but it is a struggle to keep this thing going with losing funding stream the way we've been doing it. There aren't other funding streams popping up to take its place.
Anderson says he hopes the legislature overrides Dunleavy's vetoes when it meets next. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The National Park Service has decided to treat electronic assist, or e-bikes, just like regular bicycles when it comes to their use inside their parks. One place the new e-bike policy means a big change is Denali National Park. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
A National Park Service policy memorandum issued on August 30th says the e-bike decision supports the agency's Healthy Parks, Healthy People plan by supporting a, quote, healthy park experience that is accessible, desirable, and relatable to people of all abilities, unquote.
Maybe the motor might help some people stay out there for a little bit longer. It definitely is going to help some visitors increase their access.
Denali National Park spokesperson G.W. Hitchcock says the new e-bike policy does not change park trail use.
None of the trails in our front country are open to bikes, except for the bike path that leads into the park, and that path was open to e-bikes prior to this policy change.
Hitchcock says the big change is in regard to the park road from mile 15 to its end 77 miles later at Kantishna.
Previously, up until mile 15, all bikes were allowed, but after mile 15, we only allowed traditional bikes. And this is because just basic federal understanding was that an e-bike, because it had a motor, was a motor-powered vehicle. So we treated them as a vehicle. But now under the superintendent's new policy, we'll be able to allow e-bikes to travel on the park road beyond mile 15.
Hitchcock is careful to note that the policy strictly regulates the type of electric bikes allowed in national parks to three consumer pedal assist categories, models which have top speeds ranging from 20 to 28 miles per hour.
So more often than not, this is going to be something that visitors brought off the shelf or rented from a store that's going to fall under this category. It's not necessarily going to be, you know, something that someone came up with in their garage and they're going to be hot wheeling it through the park.
Well, that's all well and good to have a regulation of that nature, but is it enforceable? That would be my big question.
Longtime Denali Citizens Council member Nancy Bale does not take issue with the idea of nearly silent, commercially available e-bikes helping people pedal up hills on the park road, but has concern that the electric assist bikes might find their way into non-core areas of the park and preserve added by the 1980 Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA.
Nothing's been authorized in the ANILCA editions for bikes on trails that we know of. So at this point, because of the impression that it's authorized, it could lead to uses that are unanticipated and unregulated.
Bale also takes issue with the way the e-bike policy came down without any public process. Denali's Hitchcock says the agency is conscious of possible problems, noting that the e-bike policy does allow individual parks to carve out exceptions.
The fact that ANILCA allows a lot of members of the public to have different access than the lower 48, so we're definitely going to try to balance all that.
Hitchcock says the e-bike policy will be looked at as part of the park vehicle management plan and that the public will have a chance to comment then. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And I'm Robin for KUAC.